Blog Talk Radio.
Paranexus Universe, this is your host Michael Jones, and tonight we are having a special guest on. It's Eric Watson. He's another abduction witness, and I'd like to first open up with saying welcome to everybody. Hope you've had a great week, and I don't know if anybody's been watching the news, but we've had some interesting developments over in Norway that a lot of people are kind of confused about it at the moment. You know, they're saying it's a missile or something to that. I'm still not buying that story right offhand. I've talked to a few ex-military people, and they're telling me that's not a missile. So, anyway, Eric Watson's joining me. Hey, Eric, how's it going?
Hey, Mike, how you doing, buddy?
Doing great, man. Yeah, so we got to meet down in Ocala Forest, I believe, on the last investigation we just did.
Actually, that was Leeden County.
Oh, okay.
My other property that I have is over in Ocala Forest.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, there's, from what I've been told, there's been a few UFO sightings in Ocala itself, around that forest area and stuff. So that was
I've never seen anything over there, but that's my property where nothing happens over there. And
nothing happens.
Everything happens. Everything happens.
That's cool. Well, could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, I'm 44 and I'm self-employed, and I own a water filtration business for well water. Build my own systems, engineer them here, and we ship them out over the internet and install them locally in Florida. I got two sons from a previous marriage, 13 years. Got a 20-year-old son and a 17-year-old. Both boys, and I'm in a relationship now. My girlfriend Bonnie, we've been together for about 10 years now.
Yeah, Bonnie's one of our field investigators, as a matter of fact.
Yes, she is.
Yeah, she's a wonderful host, too, by the way. She really cooks well. but
yeah, that was not going to be my job, but I turned it over to her, I guess. She picked it up.
Yeah, thanks again, Bonnie. That was really good food there. Anyway, we had been talking about your abduction experiences during our investigation, and you had a number of really amazing stories you shared with us. And you mind telling the audience any of it tonight?
Sure. Well, it all started back in about 1994. I'm not really good with dates. I never wrote down the exact months. I know the years that some of these things happened, but the dates, I never wrote them down for whatever reason. And still, when things happen today, I still, with the exception for the last couple of years, I write things down for the dates, but never been really good with dates. So, but in 1994, my property is hunting property, and we have a cabin out there that we built on it. It's 50 acres. And it's actually in the middle of, I don't want to tell exactly where it's at because, you know.
Oh, no, you shouldn't divulge that to begin with.
No, because it's, you know, it's open land. You know, everybody's got our stuff out there, and we got cabins out there. But It's basically it's surrounded completely by federal management area for wilderness area, and it's actually located by Cedar Key, real close to Cedar Key. And I got 50 acres in the middle of probably about 200,000 acres that are all owned by individual owners. And then there's, we got locked fences out front, your typical gates you see when you drive by, you know, owned property.
Yeah, I don't know if anybody in the audience has actually been in the actual outdoors, but I'm here to tell you, you don't hear a damn thing. That is no joke.
Yeah, you are.
You can actually hear your ears. Your ears actually will, what's the word for it? They have that high-pitched whine from the noise that you've been used to in the city. And you get out there, and it takes like a day, and it finally goes away, and then you realize how quiet it is outside. You know, it's really nice.
Mine takes about 3 days.
Does it? Okay.
Well, mine's 50 acres right in the middle of it, and I've owned it since 1986. And we never had really a whole lot going on out there. There's all kinds of animals out there. It's hunting property, so we hunt deer and wild hog out there. And I go out there. I have a cabin we built. Basically, it's about 800 square feet, about 500 square feet. It's small. We built it with a chainsaw. Looks like a stilt home on top of 11 foam poles, you know, ex-Florida Power foam poles they gave us. So it's real rustic. You know, you've seen it.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I got a deer stand that I put out about 300 yards from the cabin, and it's made out of wood. And this was back in 94. And I climbed up into the top of the deer stand and sat there at about noon. And kind of an odd time to sit in a deer stand. Usually you sit there in the morning or at night. But, you know, back then we weren't, you know, we just got our, we haven't had, you know, own property for a long time. So hunting was on management areas. So we're just happy to be out there anytime we could. So I sat there in the stand, and I remember vividly my thoughts at the time were, I can remember every thought I had, actually. I was looking at the ground, and I was really wanting to get a trophy buck, and I was looking at the ground. I just focused on a leaf. I realized what my problem was. I kept fidgeting up in the stand, moving too much. So I just focused on a leaf on the ground. I remember going through some things in my head, like, you know, I'm not going to move. I'm not going to blink. I'm not going to, you know, scratch any itches. I'm just not going to move at all. In fact, I'm just going to stare at this leaf until a deer walks out. And I wasn't done with actually that last thought, which was about four minutes after I got up on top of that stand. And I'm sitting, I have a mini 30 rifle, which is like a small version of the M1 Grand. It's an automatic. And I'm just sitting there, and all of a sudden I hear this sound, and it's sounds like it's kind of far off, the way the pitch is. It sounds like air rushing through a pipe with no motor on it. And all you hear is air being drawn to this. Sounds like it would be like a one-inch pipe, and air is coming through it really, really loud and strong. But the noise, I couldn't figure out where it's coming from. I didn't bother to look around because, you know, it sounded like it was all around me. Actually, wow. It sounded like it was all around me. So I'm just still staring at the leaf on the ground. I'm like, that is the strangest and the oddest noise I've ever heard. I've been hunting since I was 8 years old, you know, by myself in the woods.
Yeah.
I used to go hunting in St. Pete here with, you know, for rabbits back when we used to have property out here. You know, we used to have land that wasn't built on it down here. That's where I live now, in St. Petersburg.
Okay.
So that's where I've been here since 1965. So, but in this house I've been in since about the time I bought the property, 1986. But this is 93, and I'm sitting there listening to this sound, and it might be getting louder, I'm not sure, but I just really could not figure out where it's coming from. And I thought to myself, my thoughts were, I'm just going to sit here and just wait until, you know, whatever it is shows up or comes into view. And I realized that the air was kind of charged, and I started getting the hair was on my skin standing up, and almost felt like it was static.
Okay.
I think that's what it felt like.
Kind of like, you know, I guess during the winter or something when you get that static electrical charge right before you, you know, something pops you.
Yep, not even. It was really weak. It was weak. I just felt like whatever it was well, I had realized whatever it was coming from above me. So I jerked my head up and looked, and this object, it was black, maybe gray. It had its own color. You probably can't compare it to. The only thing I compare it to is maybe like dark titanium, maybe darker than that, black. It was shaped like a diamond or a delta shape, maybe like a triangle. I'm sitting at the top of a palm tree, and the palm trees, this is about a 30-foot tree, and I'm about 15 feet up in the air, maybe 20 feet, and the ball or top of the palm tree is right above my head, about 10 feet up, and I'm looking through these big palms, and I'm looking, and what I'm looking at is it looks like a black triangle. And wow. It's I'm guessing it's probably 100 feet across from left to right, but I couldn't see the edges, so it could have been 200 feet. But I'm guessing by the width down the middle, because I did see the front and the back, absolutely. So judging from that, the craft was probably about 100 feet wide.
Wow.
But I really can't say for sure.
Did you see any seams in it or any rivets or anything like that? I mean, was it that close?
It was so close I could have threw a rock up and hit it. It was probably 30 feet above my head. I could see the craft almost in its entirety, so it was probably about 40 feet
wow.
above my head. So I could see the front and the back if I looked from the front and moved my eyes to the back. I had to physically move my head to see the back of it, so that's how close it was.
Wow.
But I didn't see any rivets, and I specifically look for rivets because the first thing I thought of was some kind of a military craft, because the strange thing about our property is it used to be under a F-16 flight strip where it was a no-fly zone for almost, I guess, since day one, and they just now lifted that a few years ago for whatever reason. I think Eglin Air Force Base is in North Florida. Tomcats used to fly right over the top of my cabin. They weren't 50 feet above the cabin.
Wow.
And so you best not have a small plane around there, you know. So they have a flight strip there, and it's a no-fly zone. My buddy even confirmed it. He's a pilot. And so when I focused my eyes on this thing, whatever it was, they had no rivets. I saw some seams. No place for where landing gear comes down. That was my next thing I looked at. But the seams were kind of like odd even on both sides. One side had a couple more seams than the other.
Okay.
But what I did notice was immediately the first thing I noticed was where the sound was coming from. I'm speculating it was coming from the front because I could see a difference in what the air looked like in the front. The front looked like it was drawing air into it. And the front kind of looked like the mouth on a stingray. Have you ever seen that?
Yeah.
It was the front of it was missing, and the air was like getting hazy in front and collapsing in, and I suspect that's what the air was, that loud sucking sound. It sounded like air being drawn into a pipe.
Yeah.
And this thing had no engine sound. It was way too big to be a traditional aircraft. It was sitting on top of me. It was doing maybe a half mile an hour. It might have been just moving just a little bit, but it was pointing in the direction of east. And the second thing I noticed was my eyes moved to the back because I could hear what sounded like sparks, like a low voltage transfer of energy, you know, like a spark. And it was consistent all the way across the back wing of the craft. It reminded me of almost like Christmas tinsel. You
wow.
see on a tree that tinsel you put on there that's chrome.
Yeah.
And it was all along the edge. And it was probably, God, it's going back so many years now, I'm trying to remember, but maybe the sparks were about as wide as your fist, but it was all the way along the back. And to give you an idea of how loud the sound was, it was coming into the craft. It was just enough where it was just loud enough and not too loud enough where I could hear the discharge of this spark across the back of the craft. And then
okay.
the next thing I did, now this is all taking place within about 3 seconds. The next thing I did is I kind of like, I think I went into some kind of like a mild shock. I have no idea what the word for that would be, but when I went into a defensive posture,
yeah.
And I raised the gun up to the craft. I would never have shot it, but it was going to, whatever it was trying to do, the next thing I was thinking, it's probably going to open up a door and try to draw me into it, or it was probably going to land on top of my head. I didn't know what it was going to do, but I knew it was there for me. I knew that. And the next thing I did is I put my gun up and aimed it toward the craft, and when I did that, the craft just jolted off. It was gone in a second. I mean, it was it shot off like if you had a wrist rocket back or a slingshot, you just let it go. It left that quick, and then the sound left with it. There was no sound after it was gone. The craft was gone. Everything was gone. The feeling, everything in a fraction of a second.
So what you're saying is if you had blinked, you'd missed it.
That's right.
Wow.
My next move was, I couldn't believe what I saw. I instantly knew it was a UFO. I jumped down from the stand, like about three or four steps down. For some reason, I knew my brother was at the cabin. My brother was with me that day. He was the only one with me. My brother's 11 years older than me. He's a plumber. And he's never had any experience in his life, never had a single experience that he couldn't explain. And I had run to the cabin, and like I said, I was about 300 yards away. It took me a few minutes to get there. And we had the cabin. It was pretty well cleared out at the time. And because we built the cabin like 1987, so we cleared out about 2 or 3 acres there to put that cabin right in the middle of it. Not much has grown up around there since then. So we did have one bush on the back side of the cabin where there's no windows. And down underneath the cabin about 10 feet out was this bush. It was about chest high, not even chest high, probably waist high.
Yeah.
It was one bush about 5 feet wide. I found my brother on his knees, and he was facing the bush with his face almost buried in the bush, not quite. And I ran up to him, and the first thing I said, Bob, I said, you wouldn't believe what I just saw. I saw a UFO. And he goes, oh, that's great or neat or whatever. And I looked over to his left-hand side. He had just bought a brand-new Browning 30-06 rifle, an automatic, and there's about a $900 gun. And even though he's not really great at taking care of his guns and all that, I mean, it just, you know, he wipes them down probably once a year.
You're still with us?
Yeah, it's an expensive gun. It was laying in the mud and the leaves to his left. I said, Bob, what's your brand new Browning doing? That was my exact word. What's your brand new Browning doing in the dirt and mud over there? About 15 feet from him to his left. And he goes, oh, I don't know. That was his words. And he went over there and he picked it up, or I might have went over and picked it up. I really can't recall exactly. So he stood up, and he was pasty-faced, white-faced, kind of like sweaty on his face, catatonic, wasn't really, you know, just wasn't Bob, you know. And at that point, not much, I can't really what happened after that. I remember the details, but I don't remember, you know.
Right. Weren't you telling me that your brother had been talking about he just shot a hog or something?
Oh, yeah. He had, to this day, he believes that he was cleaning a buck, a big buck that he shot, and he had it, you know, hoisted up under the cabin. The cabin's about, you know, comes up to the top of your head, about 13 feet off the ground. And he had a deer strung up under there, and he was cleaning it that day. And I know his memory is not, he's got a pretty good memory, but that's what he was not doing that day. I can tell you that.
Wow.
There's no way. I've never seen him clean a deer into the cabin. And to that day, he did not shoot a deer at that cabin to that day, especially a buck. So I know that for a fact. And he wasn't cleaning a deer that day. So after all these years, back then, I was not really into the research side of the investigating, I was not immersed into it like I am now because of all that's happened.
Yeah.
But from what I understand, sounds like he's probably got like a screen memory.
Right.
Because that's not what he was doing. And, I try to talk to him about it. He gets real defensive, starts an argument.
So
told me that.
As far as what do you recollect happening as far as...
I think he was taken, too, because I had 6 hours of missing time. From the time I got into the stand, actually 5 minutes had elapsed that I felt that went by.
Yeah.
And when I looked at my watch, I sat in the stand. I said, okay, it's 12:05. And I sat in the stand, and when I got to my brother, it was 6 p.m. So 6 hours had elapsed, and it was already time to go home.
Man.
And he didn't make any mention about the time. I did. I was like, 6 p.m.? I go, where'd the day go? And
right.
He was out of it. He wasn't talking about it. So
that was your first?
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was going to ask you, did you actually ever remember any part of the experiences or anything during that missing time?
I remember nothing from that day. As far as ETs go, or all I remember is what I told you there. I've had flashbacks since later on in my story, if we get to it, when I came face to face to him. After that, I've had flashbacks, all kinds of flashbacks.
Okay.
You know, some of them are real flashbacks, where they're, contrived in your left hand, it's on your brain. I don't know if those are worth talking about because those aren't even, they're not even stories or not even, I can't even account for them. It's like telling somebody your dream.
Right. What was your next experience?
The next experience was the day after.
Oh, wow.
And that was all the way down in St. Petersburg, 130 miles south of my property. The next day, nothing happened, but at that night, my wife and I were in bed, which is my ex-wife, and our bed was up against the wall, and the window happened to be open that day. We have a single floor platform,
yeah.
And the window was open next to we live on a busy street. It's four lanes of asphalt, and we were awakened at 4:20 in the morning by a really loud oscillating sound. You sent me a WAV file, I think, of what you experienced before and the sound like similar to that.
See, the only problem with the WAV file that I can't reproduce how deep the actual noise is. I don't know if there's any speakers to reproduce it.
I think you're right on it, but mine was deeper. And it sounded like, I want to say an air conditioner. It sounded like a big commercial air conditioner with a fan blade missing, and it's kind of out of balance. That's what it sounds like to me.
Yeah.
And it was a frightening sound. It woke us both up instantly. We both sat right up on our knees, looked out the window, and we witnessed immediately, sitting 2 feet off the ground, was this huge orange sphere that looked like, just like looking, like you see the sun through special glasses. It didn't even look like sunspots on there, if I remember right. But it was the same color as looking at the sun through sunglasses, like a 10 in the morning sun. That's what it looked like. The sun rising, that's what it looked like, or a sunset. It was right in our front yard. It was looked like a solid mass, and it made that horrific sound. The sound didn't really match the craft. It looks like it was trying to accomplish something. I don't know if it was trying to change into something or what, but it was sitting there just oscillating 2 feet off the ground, and it was about 9-10 feet wide. I don't know if it was getting bigger or smaller. It's probably staying the same, but we watched it for an incredible 40 minutes. 30
wow.
to 40 minutes. It was about 40 minutes.
I have a question. When you were looking at this craft that was sitting out in front of your yard or whatever it is, did you actually notice anything going on around you as far as the environment or the atmosphere or how the air felt?
I didn't notice
anything.
thing. Nothing. Mm. Back then, I had a real closed mind. I didn't believe in any of this stuff. I thought people were getting abducted. That was all poppycock. I knew UFOs were out there. I can't deny that. Anybody who doesn't believe that has got their head in the sand. But the question is, we know we're here. What are they doing here? But back then, I didn't believe that. You know, maybe some people were getting abducted, but not as many people say they were. You know, I just didn't believe in it. But for the mere fact that this thing was sitting in my front yard, I live on a busy street. Even at 4 in the morning, cars drive by. Back then, not so prevalent, but today, all these years later, it's gotten quite busier, you know. And 4 o'clock in the morning, cars drive by. They come home from the bars and stuff. About one car every 5 minutes or so. Nothing drove by for that entire time that I can remember. That was kind of odd. But we were just not saying a word. We're just looking at it. We weren't talking. Then all of a sudden, it just lifted up and started moving off the property. It started going around a bush. Then it started going over the four-lane road. Then it started lifting up, started getting higher and higher. It went over a insurance agency, because, you know, it's like half commercial here.
Yeah.
And it lifted over their place, and it took forever for it to start getting altitude. And it's almost like something was wrong with it, and it was trying to do something. And I can't imagine the purpose of it sitting there for that long. And then it went over the telephone, you know, the big lights on 4th Street North, which is a big thoroughfare. It's at least eight lanes, not more, 10. It's one of the biggest roads, streets going through St. Petersburg, Florida. And after about 30 minutes, it looked like a star over Sarasota. That's how far away it was. And at that point, I remember Colleen turned to me and she said, I won't say her exact words, but she goes, "What in the F did you bring home to our family from that property?" And I was like, "I don't know, Colleen." I said, "I don't know what's going on." And that was all we said, and we just went back to bed. I don't remember getting up and walking around looking for a camera. I never went to get a camera. You know, I didn't call 911. It was the strangest thing. We went back to bed, and we didn't even talk about it the next day, if I remember right. We didn't talk about it.
Right.
I don't think we talked a whole lot about it until, you know, one day when we were amicable, you know, after we divorced and we sat down for a cup of coffee for a short period, you know. She goes, "Do you remember that thing in the front yard?" She goes, "Back in 93, she goes, "What was that?" I said, "I don't know." I said, "I've been, you know, racking my brain, studying everything all these years. I can't figure out what it was."
Right.
But, you know, she's bothered about it. Today she's kind of, she's had so many experiences that she doesn't want to talk about any of this stuff now. I think she's kind of like thinking these are fallen angels or whatever. And now she's really turned off to the subject. My older son, who lives over there half the time, he's into all this, and she never wants to talk to him about any of it. And she's having all, she even went down the way to work right about the time that we saw these, I don't know if it was related or what, but she saw this UFO going at 4 o'clock in the morning, and she's going to her job as a waitress, and she was going down to, the south side of town. And she saw this huge UFO, and I think other people saw it too. And I think it was even in a paper. But I didn't find out about it until a couple months later after she saw it. But, you know, we're separated time. But it was came over the interstate where she was. She's had, you know, other experiences since then, spirits and, you know.
Okay. Hey, hang on a second, Eric. Everybody, welcome to the chat room. And anybody out there that would like to call in, our number is 347-945-7799. Call in with your question. Ask Eric whatever you'd like. Chat room, you know, go ahead. If you've got any questions, go ahead and ask. Eric, there was one story you were telling me that, man, it just really boggles the imagination. I mean, there's no way possible for anybody to dream this up. Do you remember you were recounting the hog experience at the cabin?
Yep. Mike, that was, the same week I call this my extraterrestrial week from hell. I mean, I had so many things happen that week. That very same week, it was Friday, and I got this, the first time ever, I got what it feels like is a telepathic message. And it was a female's voice for sure. Didn't sound mechanical, sounded like a regular female's voice. And it said, "Eric, we need you to come back to the property, and you need to be there before sundown, or before the sun goes down, or the sunset." It was so many words, not exact, but that was pretty close. And I remember saying back in my mind, this, you know, being for my first telepathic message, it seemed so natural to me that, and it didn't startle me. I took it like I've taken it a million times, but I never did. And I didn't tell anybody about it. And when I took it, I didn't think about it as, many years later, I actually had a disembodied spirit voice talk to me, and it talked to my son as well. And that, when I heard that, I thought I was having a stroke. But this was really natural, and I took it for what it was. It was somebody telling me to do something. So I came back, and I told her, I said, I can't go back up to the property. I said, I just came from there. This is my weekend with my kids and my wife. And her return message was, well, you need to get there no matter what it takes if you need to start a fight with her. And I said, well, I've never had a fight with her. I said, so she goes, well, you need to call her a bitch then. And she said the word bitch like she was reading it out of a book. Like she's probably said it, you know, once in her life or never. It was the first time saying that word, which really struck me when I heard that. That's what I thought at the time. I was like, that's odd. And I didn't say to myself, who am I talking to? I didn't ask who I was talking to. It was almost like it was, some delegation of authority that, you know, I've taken a million times before. Almost like if you're a policeman taking a call over a radio and just going and doing a job.
Wow.
And it was really strange. I look back on it. I was like, you know, I don't know. But so I had a mission to go on, and I had to leave. And I started a fight with her, and she wouldn't want me to go up to the property. She's like, well, what about your kids this weekend? And I ended up, as a last resort, I ended up calling her a bitch, and I ended up, you know, not sleeping there that night. I'm getting my pickup truck. I had a brand new 94 Sonoma. I left with my white T-shirt on, pair of jeans, and my gun, and I drove straight up US 19. And for somehow, I knew exactly how fast I needed to drive to get there before the sun went down. I drove at like 96 miles an hour, straight up 19, which people, if anybody's listening to this, knows that area. We think that's impossible. I mean, it's like 12 lanes, and there's, you know, a police officer about every 10 blocks. And especially during rush hour, I hardly saw any traffic when I was driving. I saw, for a Friday night rush hour, I saw cars pull up to the red light. They're pulling up before the red light, way before it. It was really odd. And I didn't think much of it at the time. I don't know, probably because I was a younger man, but, you know, didn't put two and two together and connect the dots like I would have today. But I got to the property with time to spare. And I made it there in like an hour and a half, and it's a 3.5-hour trip, 4-hour trip going up 19 usually. And 19 was the only way to get there back then. It was anywhere near, effective for getting there.
Right.
Without taking the interstate. So I walked up the pathway to the cabin, parked my truck, took my gun, and I got halfway up the pathway, and I could hear underneath the feeder. We have a feeder. It's in front of the cabin that's on the opposite side of the cabin. It's about another 40 yards out. You've seen it out there.
Yeah.
And that feeder had brought these hogs around, these wild boars, and there's about 40 of them out there. And I could hear them fighting and, you know, making their sounds. And I was like, oh, that's good. I'm going to get myself a hog the first 5 minutes here. That never happens. I walked up the stairs my cabin, puts me in a full view of the feeder, took a shot at the biggest one, dropped it right there. The hogs all ran away, and I went down there and grabbed it by its two back legs, my gun, my other hand, and I dragged this 225-pound boar hog back to the cabin, 2 seconds flat, right up the stairs I went with it, which is really unusual. Why would you clean a hog, you know, up on those wooden, on that wooden, you know, drag up the stairs and clean it on the wooden porch up there? We got no running water, no electricity there. It's way out in the middle of nowhere. And I remember cutting the back straps out of it, turn around, I put it in my big cooler there, had filled with crushed ice, put the hogs, put all the meat inside of these plastic bags, and that's all I was going to clean out of the hog. You know, in a wild pig, there's not a whole lot of meat on there. I could have worked harder at it, but for some reason I didn't. So I dragged it back down the stairs. Plus, it was a more of a wild one. It had the black, wiry hair, and, you know, it's
right.
Not, you know, not your favorite type of pig when you shoot one, you know. So I dragged it down the trail, and I went about 30 yards out, and I just dragged it off the trail so it wouldn't be out in the open there. And I just dragged it about 5 feet back inside the wood. So left it. By the time I got to the bottom of the stairs, 30 yards away, right around here, I could hear the wild hogs munching on that hog, breaking its bones and eating it. And that's not uncommon for hogs. They are meat eaters. But, I mean, they found it before I got to the cabin steps, which, you know, took me all of 5 seconds to get there. And I thought, now that at that point I was thinking, now this is really getting weird. Something's not right here. And then my next thought was, these hogs are out for blood, and if I break my leg out here or fall and hurt myself, they're going to end up eating me, which could very well happen. So that's not a pleasant thought. So I went back up the stairs. I got to the top of the stairs, and here comes this 150-pounder, pretty good size, and he's like a brown-colored hog with brown eyes. I'll never forget the eyes. They look different than a regular hog. Like big brown human eyes. And he was looking up at me, and he was snorting. And that's, let me tell you, that doesn't happen. Maybe if it was a farm, escaped farm pig or something, but these are wild hogs. And,
right. So they're pretty skittish. They're pretty skittish. They don't tend to stay around people whatsoever.
Oh, yeah. You can hunt for 30 years, and if you're not a good hunter, you won't get one. So, you know, I could have got two of them right there. And, you know, that's not so unusual. Maybe the smell of blood was getting all excited, you know. But he was just standing there, and I was like, shoot, go away. You know, I don't want to shoot another one. Plus, I just thought it was kind of weird, you know, he's being up so close to me like that. And, you know, he was snoring, but he had that big eye, just had his head tilted, and he was making eye contact with me, just looking right at me. And that was just really freaking me out. So he finally moseyed off, and then... strangely enough, all the hogs came back out again. The feeder was filled with all those hogs. And I did have a camera with me. And it was one of those really cheap cameras. Back then, I was not into photography. I had a camera, but not a good one at the cabin. It's a plastic one, the kind you bring to the photo mat.
Right.
And, it's like an $8 camera. And I took some pictures of the hogs, and I had them for years. But going through the divorce, they got, thrown away. I guess, but I looked everywhere for them. Those pictures, I'll never forget, are weird. They look like hogs, but then they don't. They look like black masses. If you showed them to somebody, they probably wouldn't be able to identify them as a hog. But it could be a characteristic of the cheap, you know, grainy,
the
400
cheap
speed. Yeah, the 400 speed film they put in the camera. So
what kind of day was this?
Now this was when the sun was just going down.
Okay, so you could actually still see pretty well.
Yep, that was the last bit of light. I had about less than 30 minutes to spare when I got there. So at that point, all the hogs broke free of the feeder and left that area, and then they started walking toward the cabin. And at that very moment, before that, sea fog rolled in. I guess it's sea fog, but it was really thick fog, that really sweet smelling. I'll never forget the taste of it. You could taste it in your mouth. It was so thick.
Wow.
And you could see, your hand looked fuzzy in front of your face. I could still see the hogs. They were walking down the trail. The fog had evidently legitimizing it back then. The fog had confused the hogs, maybe, and now they just decided to start walking, and they realized they're walking underneath my cabin.
Okay.
But, you know, if that's what happened. But the fog, I've never seen fog like this before. It was so thick you could cut it. And the hogs were underneath the cabin, and then they started rubbing themselves on the cabin. The cabin was swaying back and forth, back and forth. And I'm like, well, that's really odd, you know. It's like every possible memory you could think of, or not memory, but even possible scenario, you know, was there all wrapped up into one night, you know. Like a lifetime full of, it's almost like somebody's trying to keep me busy.
Right.
And with all these visual things, you know. And so they were underneath the cabin, and they were grinding themselves on the poles, which is not unusual either, because, you know, they try to get ticks off them and stuff. And so they do, you know, rub their bodies on trees and stuff. But they haven't done it since, and they've never done it before. And the mud from that night, from their bodies, was on those poles for about a decade.
Huh.
Before it finally went away. So I know it was an actual event.
Okay.
But they've never done it before, never done it after. Very strange. You know, really strange is dragging that hog up those stairs with one hand without any help, and how easy it was for me to do it. And, you know, just everything had little, you know, it's almost like Alice in Wonderland, little glitches that didn't quite fit, you know.
Right. Oh, I got a question for you, man. Those stairs you drug it up, how steep were they? I mean, were they easy to navigate, or?
Well, they're made out of wood, and they're about as steep as the type you see in if you were to drag one of those metal staircases through Lowe's or Home Depot and go to the next step,
yeah,
pretty doggone close to that. And now so, I have metal ones in there, which are those type of steps. But my wooden ones were a little bit wider than those, but they were just as steep.
Okay.
And here's where it gets really strange for that that one. I mean, getting stranger than that for that particular day. I ended up thinking, you know, this is going to be, you know, something told me to barricade the stairs. So I dragged a barbecue. I had a big barbecue up there. I dragged that in front of the staircase at the top so nothing could, once it got to the top of the staircase, and have trouble getting onto the porch. And I'm thinking, if they knock down that door in the middle of the night, you know, I'm going to be eaten by hogs. What if they're all crazy and, you know, I can't defend myself with the gun I got? You know, so I'm thinking the best thing to do is, you know, barricade the stairs because something's not right. You know,
I don't know if the audience can quite realize how steep the stairs were myself. When I was at the cabin, you literally had to hang on to the side rails to get up the steps you already had installed since the other was, you know, were there. These were the same way. So, I mean, it was pretty much the hogs. There's no way for a hog to go up those kind of steps. It was more like a ladder, wasn't it?
It's, you know, like ship, like the stairs in a Navy ship, you know, they're that type.
Okay.
Well, here's the weird thing about it is the hogs did go up and down those steps. Something did all night long that was very heavy because at that time I had no bunks in that cabin. I had just a couple mattresses on the floor, and that was good enough for back then, you know. So I had a blanket, and I sat there. I remember sitting there in the corner with my gun in my lap. And my last memory of that night before I passed out was the animals, something big and heavy, many of them going up and down the stairs all night. As if, you know, they're trying to get at me. And in the morning when I woke up, when I went out on the front porch, the first thing I noticed, the stairs had about 3 inches of black mud on every single step. It was just like somebody poured it like concrete up and down the steps, thousands of prints in the mud up and down. And why? I never looked at the prints to see exactly what the animals were. I just, I guess, assumed that they were hogs. But hogs, back then I didn't notice, but talking to a pig farmer and, you know, some people since then are professionals that raise hogs and swines. They say hogs do not climb stairs. They don't like anything underneath their feet that doesn't feel like what's underneath their feet all the time. Like if hogs are raised on concrete, they won't walk out onto grass. They won't walk into dirt. They have to get used to it.
All right.
And well, they definitely don't go up downstairs.
So you say it's something big and heavy, huh? Oh, well, you know, we were down there. You say we were down. We were down there on a Bigfoot investigation. You don't think it was Bigfoot or anything like that, do you?
I haven't got a clue other than, well, I looked at the prints, and I don't think I saw any of the prints that were bigger than animal prints. But I didn't look closely at the prints. It would have been a perfect opportunity, but I don't know why. I guess I just glanced at them, and they looked like what I thought they were. I figured it was hog, so I didn't look any closer. I wish I did, but something, it just broke all the rules that night. And it might sound like it's not a big deal to the average listener, but if you're a hunter, you're sitting there going, yeah, that doesn't happen, and that doesn't happen, and that doesn't happen.
Right. But this, I mean, that led up to other experiences later on, too, didn't it?
Well, let's see what happened after that. I made some notes here before I called.
Well, what about the, I remember you talking about a lady that you had met, and you were talking about making eye contact with it, the gray or whatever it was. And it remarking that it didn't like your eyes either or something to that. I can't remember exactly how the story went.
Well, here's the thing. After I got divorced, and it was about, let's see what year this would be, probably about 2000, it'd be about 2004, I was in my bed, alone in my bed, and it was about 4:15 in the morning, 4:20, and I heard, I got a small Boston Bull Terrier, she made like a noise, and I kept her out in the carport, like in the garage, at that time, and I heard her yelp, because she wasn't house trained, so I heard her yelp, and it was loud, and it woke me up, and I wasn't that asleep anyway, so I opened my eyes up, but at that second, about 2 seconds later, all that I could move was my head, and I couldn't move my body. And at that very second, these your typical stereotype grays came right through the walls. Sounds like an impossibility, but I saw it happen with my own eyes, and they just came right through the walls, just like they're walking through a door. And it came through my, first it came through the wall where it was inside the house, and it didn't go through my entertainment center. I have an entertainment center at the time, and three of them came through the door that was closed. They assembled in front of my bed, two on the left, the female one at the foot of my bed on the right, and then on the right side of my bed was three more. One of them was really tall next to my bed, next to me, he's closest to me. He wasn't really tall. He's about 5 feet. And the other ones are about 3.5 feet tall. The tall one bent down, was looking into my eyes. Before he did that, the female one, I could tell with the telepathy that was going. Now this is another episode of telepathy. And it just felt as normal as me talking to you right now. In fact, it felt more normal than talking over Skype because it's my first time talking on Skype.
Well, yeah.
Actually, it's more normal.
Yeah. See, that's some of the experiences I've had, too. I mean, it's just clear as a bell. It's like you're actually having a conversation with your mouth.
There's like 1,000 bits of information added to every sentence that you wouldn't get with speaking. It's like you can understand talking to a person for the first time. You can understand their personality, their sense of humor. There's like extra information with every word that comes across. It's a lot more colorful than talking.
Right.
It's almost like you're handicapped when you're with speaking language, but with telepathy. Not that I've done it outside of this relationship with these entities, but she said these words. I'll never forget it. She goes, Eric. She goes, well, Eric. She goes, well, we finally meet. And what she meant by that was, if it was just me talking to somebody, or her talking out loud, you would just get that would be the first contact. But when she said that, she's talking to my consciousness that is, you know, cognizant of what's going on, not the catatonic one that she's normally speaks to. And I knew that when she said it. I knew it instantly. Okay. And I was like, you know, and she's, in other words, she's talking to an Eric she doesn't know. Or, you know, maybe, you know, wanted to know, but, you know, she's only been used to talking to the one that's, I guess, how they, when they put you out halfway, you know what's going on. You know, it's almost like you're in a drunken stupor, you know. She just, that was my impression I got from her. And then the tall one bent over, he's looking into my eyes, and he ended up shoving some kind of a, I didn't see what it looked like. All I saw was a shiny, it probably looked like a shoehorn type of instrument, put it right down my throat, and at the very instant that that happened, my lungs inflated, almost at a point like it was elastic, like my chest was going to explode.
Wow.
And he did it three times. He did it. It was harder. My chest blew up bigger than you could ever imagine your chest expanding to. And when it blew out, I could actually see, you know, your saliva come out, aspirated. That's how hard it came out. Mm-hmm. And I could see him step to the side each time I did it. And I've never heard of anybody having an experience like that except for one. And it was on a video that I rented, I think up off of Netflix or whatever. But it was some alien abduction video that I watched recently. And there's a girl named Kelly on there from Australia. And she was talking about all her abduction scenarios. And she goes, well, I've had – there's one other one that I never talk about, but I think it was just a dream. And she goes on to talk about her chest was expanded like elastic. And I was like, holy.
Sorry about the interference, everybody. We're back, and Eric was telling us about the encounter he was having. Eric, do you want to pick up back when you were talking about the lady from Australia?
Yeah, she is the only one that I know of that I've, you know, and I've done a lot of reading on the subject. I mean, it's I know you're running to the end of the show, but there's another time that I had a telepathy experience that was before this one and after after the incident in the woods, you know, the latter part of the one with the that whole week there when that was up, is about 2003, I got a telepath that I need to go to Cedar Key Bridge. Which is a little bridge out there on the Gulf that's in the middle of nowhere, and you can see the sky really good. And it said, I think it told me to bring Bonnie and my kids. We went out there, and it said, be there at 10:30 at night. And I got there. And when we got there, we were just treated to some UFO show, I'll tell you. They were going across the sky back and forth, and I brought two video cameras, never thought to pick one up. Not until the very end. I got about 5 minutes of footage. This is the same night where a lady called in who lives in California that filmed UFOs out over the ocean. And when I watched it on CNN, I was watching the lights going back and forth, you know, at impossible speeds. That's what we saw. And I had this... I didn't get a telepathic message, but I got like an intuition that they're going to come and it's time for contact, physical contact.
Right.
Some of us there, my kids, Bonnie, we all remember it differently. But the way I remember it is the last portion of it, the craft looked like it was coming toward us at this point. And something told me it was a big black triangular object. I couldn't exactly see it, but you could see the light.
You still with us, Eric?
Thousands of miles an hour, and it looked like it was so far away. It was on the edge, probably in California. Who knows? It was in that direction. don't know if you could see that far on the horizon, but whatever it was coming toward us fast, and it took a while on its way to get to where we're at. At that point, I said, guys, prepare. We're gonna have contact. I think I said it where I kind of scared my 12-year-old son at the time, and he's not into this stuff at all. He's got a lot of problems with it. And he was sitting down next to Bonnie, and he goes, Dad, tell him not to come. I don't want to see that. I don't want to meet those people. And he was stomping his feet and to get my attention. And I was like, Matt, don't worry. It's going to be fine. At that point, I got this feeling that they broke contact. They stopped. And when they stopped, I was like, give me the video camera quick because it's almost over. And I turned the video camera on, and I just found the tape the other day. The object started changing all these colors of the rainbow. And all these different colors. It looked like a kaleidoscope thing, you know, when you're looking at it through there. Zoomed in on it. It was a pretty good zoom. Can't see the object, but you can see this object turn into these incredible colors, probably like 6-7 different colors. I've only watched the video like 2 or 3 times when I first got it. My brother looked at it and said, oh, that's a UFO. What's that? It doesn't show anything. All it shows is a big light over the water and changing colors. You don't know what that is. So I kind of got discouraged. I think at the time I was going to upload it or send it out and have it transferred to the, because it's on tape, 8mm.
Yeah.
High 8, so I lost interest in it. Lost the tape for a long time, but I just found it.
Great.
I'm pretty sure that's what it is because it's marked UFO. But that was in between when they came into my bedroom. When they came into my bedroom, that was the last full, contact, with the exception of, let me finish the story when they're in my bedroom. Everybody's probably wanting to hear that. But he did his little thing there where he blew up my chest and did something with some kind of a procedure. And I could tell, even without having telepathy with the other ETs that are in the room, I guess they're ETs, what grays are. Some high beings, I don't know. Maybe they're below us, who knows. But two of them to the left, at the foot of my bed, they were some type of security. They were like checking the house first. The one next to her was the girl, the female. The other two were like students. The taller one was the one that did the procedure. And he was all about business, let me tell you. The rest of them seemed like normal humans. The feeling I could get, it's kind of like a telepathy, kind of like when you have it, it almost like, your brain kind of like overflows a little bit, and you can get it's almost like you can, read the book, by not opening up the cover.
Right.
And that's what you get from the other hosts that were there.
Right. Hey, Eric, we're fixing to come to the close of the show. I'll tell you what, I would love to have you back on next month. Are you okay with that?
That sounds good. I'll do that.
And that way we can pick up the story. Next week's show, we're going to have On the Nature of Ghosts and Spirits with Andrew Barnes and Paul Tyatt. We welcome back Andrew and Paul to discuss their new documentary and research. That ought to be a pretty fun show. Doug and Grant are going to be hosting that. I thank everybody for attending the show tonight, and I hope everybody had fun listening in. As always, join Paranexus if you'd like good information and good research. I appreciate everybody coming tonight. Thank you, and have a good night.
It's Paranexus Universe.